Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
The 2016 National Radio Hall of Fame welcomes Michael Savage.
Listen up today, because today is going to be a masterpiece of outrage.
Michael Savage started his national talk show 22 years ago.
And now, direct from the towers above Manhattan, it's the Michael Savage Show. To the right of Rush and to the left of God, and now, Michael Savage.
I'm glad I can be with you 7 nights a week, because these stories are just not going away. I mean, every day, in every way, we're getting assaulted.
Communicating a simple message: borders, language, and culture. He changed the landscape of talk radio, rising to the top of the pack.
What about our nation? You're going to let them become citizens even though they're illegal, even though they broke the law? You know that many of them are on our welfare system. You know many more will go on. And you're going to tell me you're worried more about El Salvador and about the San Salvador than you are about America? I said, by definition, you ought to be deported.
This was not cookie cutter radio. This was something different.
From Catcher in the Rye to Ketchup on the Fly in 2 generations. Starlets to harlots. Preachers to breachers. Athletes to sexleets. Rabbis to sandflies. Boy Scouts to Toy Scouts. Girl Scouts to Twirl Scouts. From the Eagle to the Beagle in 2 generations. From LSD to ADD.
So influential, even the liberal media named him the godfather of Trumpomania. Donald Trump used the Savage Nation as a sounding board.
What would you do if you were president, first day, what would you do with Putin to stop these war drums?
If I win on November 8th, I think I could see myself meeting with Putin and meeting with Russia prior to the start of the administration. I think it would be
wow. That's an amazing news story. That's fabulous, Mr. Trump. That's an amazing answer. Because somebody, an adult, has to step in now and stop this insanity.
Resulting in the election of a president of the United States, Michael Savage.
All right, welcome to the program. I am live today for you, and I want to thank every listener who listens to this program for giving me everything a man could dream of in life, and then some. That's it. There's nothing more I can say. It's just the way it is. You did it. You voted me in, and I know that if I were a humble guy, I wouldn't even mention it. There's a famous story that I'll never forget. I was a young student at Queens College in New York studying biology, and one of them, I think it was Mr. Watson or Mr. Crick. Mr. Watson was a teacher, professor of genetics, and he had won the Nobel Prize that day. And his students were sending him notes saying, "You just won the Nobel Prize today." And he sent back a note to the students saying, "Yes, I know. Now can we go back to the genetics discussion we were having?" Now, that's a truly humble man. I can't say that I'm in a business where humble pays. In fact, humble doesn't pay in radio. As my father taught me when I was a little boy, he said, "You know, the Bible says the meek shall inherit the earth. But let me tell you something, Michael," as he looked at the dirty streets with broken bottles in the Bronx. He said, "I have a different opinion about the meek." He said, "The meek shall inherit," and he used the four-letter word that I can't use on this family show. I think he was right. I personally think he was 100% right, but that doesn't mean you have to be mean to succeed, comma necessarily, period. It means that you have to be what you have to be to get where you're going to go. Remember the saying, "Nice guys finish last"? I change it to, "Nice guys don't finish at all." But does that mean you have to be the opposite of that? That means you have to be mean and horrible to everybody? No, the opposite is not true. There's some balancing point, and I hope that I've achieved it, both on air and off air. But one never knows. It's for other people to make that determination. It's very personal at that. Now, that opening that you just heard was created by one of my producers, Jim. Jim is a great guy. Jim Verdi has been in radio a long time. I didn't know he was that good. I don't know why we've argued all these years, Jim. Who knew you were so talented? But Jim has been in radio a long time, and he made that for me. And what we have for you today is an invitation. An invitation to phone 855-400-7282. And I don't know, what am I going to ask you to say? What are your favorite memories of the show? Does radio have a future? What do you like most about the Savage Nation? I've asked those questions before, but we're going to get different answers today. And for your listening pleasure, we have some of the highlights. For example, we have Mama Savage on when she was still alive on her secret to longevity. That's the one that threw me for a loop because she had better timing than I did. And wait until you hear it. I mean, maybe you heard it a few times, but every time I hear it, I have to laugh at how her timing was perfect. She should have been in show business. She would have been happier on the road, I think, with Milton Berle than she was, whatever. Then we have Savage Interviews the Jewish Gangster from June 10th, 2010. I don't even know what that interview is, but someone called yesterday and said, my favorite show was when you introduced the Jewish Gangster. I said, what Jewish Gangster? And we found it. And then we have the most phenomenal 2.5 minutes in my radio history, and that is 9/11/01, when the Islamo-fascist vermin attacked us in the World Trade Center. And I went on the air in a blast. I did a flamethrower opening, and we have that for you. We have Joe from Albuquerque, who was going to commit suicide. Do you remember him? Raise your hands if you remember that day, 8/13/14. Joe called me from a pickup truck. I got chills up my spine as I say it to you. And Joe didn't yell and scream and say, I'm going to die. He just said, I've had it. I can't go on, and explain why. And Joe said he was going to end his life soon after he got off the phone. He had the gun loaded next to his seat in the car. And I talked him off that. And you're going to hear why he didn't commit suicide. In the hope if Joe is listening, he calls this program. We then have the White Owl. We then have things Savage has seen in his lifetime. We have the Savage Band in Britain and so much more for you on the program today. And again, the phone number is 855-407-282. I want to direct you to a great article written by Art Moore of WorldNet Daily 1 hour ago. Michael Savage to be inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame tonight. And the subtext is, I'm honored to be in the company of greats. That's the actual award that was given to somebody else with their name on it in 2012. My actual award is being given tonight in Chicago. And when it is finally in my hands, we will put it up instead of this gentleman whose name is there. It says Lather Hasprite. I don't even know who this guy is, but the article is great. And it's a beautiful thing. Savage won induction in the category of spoken word on-air personality in a polling of radio listeners among finalists Sean Hannity, Diane Rehm, and Mike Francesca. To be honest with you, Sean is a great competitor. He and I have been competing for a long time. You got to understand this. I have no enmity towards Sean Hannity. I actually like Sean Hannity. I can't say that about others in the business. He's a genuinely nice guy who actually is what he appears to be. And I'm sure he'll win in the very near future. Savage was dubbed the godfather of Trumpomania in a profile earlier this year by Salon magazine. That's interesting. Now, it's interesting that I sent an email to Donald Trump's people last night. I sent an email to his number one person who I've interacted with for years today. She said he's locked in back-to-back meetings putting his cabinet together. Well, I never take no for an answer. You know, the sale begins when the customer says no. So I sent him another email. I said, I had Doug Lynn up in Oregon, my other producer. I sent her another email. Say, look, does he know that the millions of people who put him over the finish line are listening today? And it would mean so much to them for him to call for even 30 seconds and say, congratulations, Savage Nation, you did it. She said, and then she sent an email saying, yes, I've given it to him. And if he gets a second, he will call. Now, I'm not counting on it. But I do want you to know that he knows you're listening, et cetera. I grew up listening to radio in the 1940s, said Savage. As my father smoked his Philip Morris cigarettes, I would lie in his lap listening to the Green Hornet and the Lone Ranger. Later on, I told you the story. My mother took me to Radio City Music Hall, and I was awestruck to learn there was no thunder, and it was a man hitting metal to make the sound. Likewise, I was shocked to find out there were no horses in the studio. Savage said that even in the talk format, radio is a theater of the mind. And I want to pause at that junction. This is a theater of the mind. Radio is supposed to be entertaining. What it's become, unfortunately, amongst all of us in the medium, especially in this hyper-political world that we live in, is sort of a political outlet for rage. Now, maybe rage is important, and I've done enough of it in my lifetime, and I'll probably do it again as things don't go the direction I want them to go in. But nevertheless, rage is only one emotion. And if you overuse a single emotion, whether it be in your performance or in life, you're going to lose people. They don't want to hear it over and over again. So my loyal listeners who voted for me to win this honor, let me make you a promise. I promised you that when the election was over, and it is over, I would go back to what made me so popular way back in the 90s, and that is the theater of the mind and the diversity or versatility of the ideas that are constantly flowing in the world. I mean, after all, isn't there more in the world than politics? Isn't there something else in the world other than Democrats and Republicans and liberals and conservatives? I hope so. Of course, there's a lot to be talked about in that area, but I want to bring you the other stuff, the other things. So you can expect from me over the coming days, weeks, and months, God willing, the other elements that I find interesting. Now, today is a very, very difficult day for me. I got to give you like the inside story, which I always try to do up to a point. I mean, only a fool would open themselves up and let the worms crawl out, so to speak. But let me open myself up a little bit more for you now. Right after the show yesterday, I told you how to go for minor dental work, right? Well, it wasn't minor. It turned into an hour and a half of agony in the chair. One tooth had to be wired. The other tooth had to be this, a crown. I didn't even know what a crown was. I thought it was a little thing. By the time he got through with the tooth on top, I saw a jagged hook. I didn't know what I was looking at. I said, what do you mean? What'd you do to me? He said, well, so anyway, he put one on, a temporary. And I figured, all right, I'll be able to do the show today. And I was going to go to KSFO Studios in San Francisco to do the show. They were all prepared for me. Lo and behold, I get up at 9. I'm having a light breakfast, no heavy food, eating a little piece of pita bread with some tomato and avocado on it, if you want to know. I feel a hard object. And I said, oh, no, this can't be. There's no bones in a tomato. Maybe there's a special tomato being grown somewhere with bones in it for calcium. But no, there it was. The crown was in the... I said, oh, come on. So I just came back minutes ago from another one with glue in my head. I mean, it's terrible, but look, this is not, you know, this is not Sawtooth Ridge or whatever, Hacksaw Ridge. This is not Okinawa. This is not Afghanistan. This is not Iraq. This is not cancer. This is not a heart attack. This is not a child dying. This is not a mother dying. It's only a tooth. So, although my energy's a little low, I'm here. And hopefully your calls will pick me back up where I normally am, and we'll get back on our feet together. And I'll be with you for the next couple of hours on this great day of celebration. Again, the phone number is 855-407-282. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
Stick to the show that I was going to do. I can't believe this story. Are you ready?
Please, hold on to your seats. Romney and Trump to discuss Secretary of State position, NBC source says. Former Republican presidential nominee Mittens Romney will meet with Donald Trump this weekend to discuss the Secretary of State position. A source close to the president-elect with direct knowledge of his thinking told NBC News. In March, the former Massachusetts governor called Trump a phony and a fraud. Trump has called Romney a loser and has said he choked like a dog during the 2012 race. All right, Trump endorsed Romney during his presidential bid 4 years ago. All right, what should I ask you? I'm going to ask you this question. Romney to be Secretary of State, you know, it's not such a bad appointment. I think he'd be good at it because he's a milquetoast kind of guy. I don't think he'll do, you know, like doctor do no harm. It's the first rule. First do no harm. He won't do what Hillary did. He's not going to have a private email server and send state secrets around the world, is he? As far as I know, Romney has no Huma Abedin in his closet.
that he travels with. So it's not a bad idea. Romney's got the look to be Secretary of State. He's probably is a liberal Republican. What harm can he do? Well, he'll be soft on the Muslim problem. That's the one thing. He'll be soft on the illegal immigrants overrunning our border. That's another thing. He'll agree with the Marxist Pope. That's another thing. He's probably bought the global warming lie. That's another thing. We'll see him in Antarctica yet in a pair of mittens saying the ice is disappearing. Oh, God. Look, the thing is this. You got to see the foibles of humanity for what they are. Don't take them so personally. We won the election. Just rest assured that it's not Hillary Clinton appointing a Secretary of State like Bonnie Frank. I mean, let's look at it in reverse. Let's say Hillary Clinton, when we wake up and hear that she's appointed, who would she appoint as Secretary of State? Certainly wouldn't be Bonnie Frank. I'm sure he's happy in retirement and wherever he is, Jacksonville, Puerto Rico. I don't know where he is, on a beach chair. Who would Hillary Clinton have appointed, now that I think about it? Her? I want you to think of the meanest feminist you could ever imagine from one of the worst universities in America. Somebody out of a science fiction novel. Somebody who looked like she worked in Bergen-Belsen. That would be Secretary of State under Hillary. That's a nightmarish vision, I must tell you. That's all. So, all right, let's move on. Don't call me on it, please. Please do not call me on that. Connor on WABC, go ahead, 30 seconds or less. What's on your mind?
Michael, I've been listening to you since I was about 13. I'm going to be 30 next year. I wanted to say thank you for kind of elucidating what it is to be a real man to me. We live in a hyper-masculine culture that shuns knowledge. And I appreciate the fact that you really exude what it is to be a well-rounded, educated...
I think you said we live in a hypo-masculine culture, right? Not hyper. We live in a hypo-masculine or a super hyper-feminist culture is what we live in. But, hey, if I've helped you see the light, my friend, here comes Teddy and me to the rescue. Stay on the line.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
Oh, man. Did I like the 80s or not? I don't even remember. Who can remember? It's a blur. I could say some things, but it's a family show, so we'll go on. Romney as Secretary of State. That's the rumor now. Why can't he make him ambassador to Mexico? Wouldn't that be better? Wasn't Romney born in Mexico when his father was something or other? I mean, Jack Kennedy did make his Massachusetts arch rival Henry Cabot Lodge ambassador to Vietnam. It was a way of getting rid of him. I mean, Secretary of State is always on the road, right? Always globetrotting. Maybe it's a good way to keep him moving and keep him away from him. It's pretty smart. I don't know. Who knows? It's the liberal Republican establishment. If it happens, it happens. Better him than Newt Gingrich. Let's put it to you that way. Newt Gingrich could be chief trumpeteer of the trumpet nation, of the Trump nation. He could get an instrument, a wind instrument, and just play the trumpet on the stage every time. You know, every time Trump comes out, he could play the trumpet. Where was I? I want to play something for you. That's what I want to do. It's the glue that they put in. God, I can feel I'm not as sharp as normal. It's terrible. Just awful. They use, like, dental glue? It's crazy to put glue in your head right near your brain. But I think back, you know, look at the advancements they have in dental work today. They make a tooth, they fabricate it out of plastic while you're waiting, put it in your head. George Washington had a wooden tooth. I don't know how they put it in his head. How could they attach a wooden tooth to George in his era, right? A wooden tooth. What did they use? Like horse glue from a hoof? They have to kill the horse to get the glue for George Washington's wooden tooth? I don't know. Because if there was PETA around, George Washington would have been like a toothless homeless person. What did they make glue out of in that era? Like George Washington's time. Like sap from a pine tree? That stuff, you can't get it off your hands. Do you ever touch like pine sap? Maybe they use pine sap in the head. All those phenola compounds were probably good, get them high. Probably got George Washington high, the fake tooth. Hello, infidels. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Phone number is 855-407-2822. I want to play something for you, and it is a number of years ago when the mother of the Savage Nation called this show. I called her. I don't remember how long it was before she went, you know, to the final reward. Where is this one? You got to hear how this emerges. Listen to this woman's timing in clip 02 on the Savage Nation.
Mother Savage, I was talking with my audience about fond memories and things that influenced me. And I remember the day you took me and Alan to Radio City Music Hall. Do you remember here how radio was done behind the scenes?
Oh, sure.
Do you remember when they rattled the big piece?
The NBC tour.
The NBC tour.
Right.
And they show you with the horse's hooves to make it sound like a horse on a...
Right.
And then they rattled a piece of metal to make it sound like thunder.
Right.
And then where did you take us to eat? Do you remember where you would take Alan and I to eat?
Oh, we went to eat the Automat.
No. Well, the Automat was one place. How about when you took us to the Floridian?
Oh, my God. That's right.
Remember they whipped
the... Floridian, the Californian.
Now, you see, you're in Florida and I'm in California. There was something there. But they whipped the eggs up. What I liked about it is you made eggs. I mean, I don't want to put you down or anything, but they were just eggs. They were flat like everyone else's eggs. But when you went into this place, they had a way to make the egg go up like in a pyramid.
They put something in the eggs to make it puffy.
Yeah, I would have been a foot taller if I didn't eat those eggs, probably what they put in there.
They were delicious. You can't get that kind of food again.
No. Ma, let me ask you this. What was the name of the Italian chain in New York that was Romeo's 50-cent spaghetti that we'd go to, 50 cents a plate? What was it? Was it Romeo's?
I remember now, Romeo's.
Remember, it was pretty inexpensive, and it was a chain, and we would go in every once in a while, and it was always...
That's a plate.
Yeah, but was it Romeo's spaghetti? I think...
It may have been that.
What did you eat in there?
Spaghetti. I still love it.
How do you... You're 83, right?
Right.
But you're not on a low-fat diet. You never have been.
I'm not what?
You're not on a low-fat diet. I mean, you still...
I should be.
You should be. But the truth is, you and I, once I got my PhD in nutrition, I'd come to your house and you'd always cook the same fatty foods, and I would say, how can you do that? And you always ate it, but God bless you. What else? You like on a Saturday, what do you eat when you go out?
French fried potatoes.
You're 83 years old. You eat French fried potatoes, and what else do you have with it? What other light bite?
Frankfurters. Sauerkraut.
Oh, I love you. But let me ask you, truthfully, you don't smoke or drink, right?
No.
In your life, did you smoke?
No.
Yeah, I saw once you did when you were 30. You took a cigarette.
Just to show off.
But, so in other words, you think
and
that it's...
Inhale.
So in other words, what you didn't inhale like Bill Clinton. Is that what you just said? You didn't inhale. What were you and Bill Clinton?
No, I didn't inhale.
You didn't inhale. And the president said that. Look what it did for him.
No, I never had any vices.
You never had any vices. But, Ma, what do you think...
All I did was eat food.
So you can eat anything, but what do you think is the secret to longevity?
What's the secret?
Yeah. Because you're an elder. You're 83.
Yeah, in my case, what it is, I think.
What?
No sex.
No sex. Well, that in San Francisco is a sin, what you just said, because these people believe that the more is more sex you have is better.
They're not 83.
No, you can't argue with that. So you think...
Not at all.
So in other words, if I have no sex for the rest of my life, I could eat French fries and hot dogs and I'll be okay.
I hope so.
It's not a bad trade-off, I'll tell you the truth. With the problems that sex brings in a person's life, I think I'd rather have French fries and Frankfurters, to be frank with you.
Is that it? That's pretty good. Did you notice her timing? God bless her. I mean, she was not a professional performer, but she set me up pretty good. I said, Ma, what do you owe longevity? What? To live so long. So she builds it up. She says, well, in my case, yes. And bingo, the no sex comment. It shows you the timing. She had it in her. I think there's a theatrical gene. I think it runs in families. Not everyone acts it out in a professional way. But either you have a theatrical gene or you don't. I think that there's a theatrical gene and I inherited it. Now let's move on to the callers on the Savage Nation. By the way, we just got a call from Joe from Albuquerque, who called in August of 1994, just before World War One. He called in 2014. Remember I said we talked him off the cliff of suicide? He just called the show. He's going to call in the next day. He's still living. Probably doing better than I am. I'd like to find out what his secret is. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he eats French fries and hot and hamburgers. What do you want to talk about, folks? I'm not going to... The news. Come on, we did already the Romney. Another show would be the whole show. Standard fare and talk radio would be Secretary of State Romney? All day long. Well, what do you think of Romney as Secretary of State? Joe from Schmendrickville, what do you think? Harriet from New York City on WABC, what do you think about... I'm not going to do that. What's there to say? We don't know if it's true. It's just up there. Who knows? And what are you going to do about it anyway? What, are you going to listen to you now? They're working out a deal. I told you the R. Look, I was right out front with the Rinso previous thing on Monday. It was on Drudge for 18, 20 hours. Millions of people saw it. I didn't do it to attack anybody. I did it because it was like a cautionary statement. I mean, I knew what was coming. He worked a deal out with the RNC. Now they want some payback. And they want their people in high positions. So don't be so shocked if Romney does become a big cabinet member. And then you can make all the jokes you want. You know, what's he said? Either Secretary of State, who knows? It could be him, Giuliani. Names are being floated. But till it's actually cemented, what are we going to talk about? So let's talk about the good stuff, which is the eternal stuff, which is the Radio Hall of Fame Award, which is your calls. And if you get on the show today, it will go into the archives that I own, my library of archives, and it will be embedded in history, the history of my radio show anyway, right? WMAL in Washington, D.C., line 4. Thank you so much for listening and calling. Maurice, what's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing, Dr. Savage? Listen, the best episode, in my opinion, you ever had was when you talked about that grizzly old guy in the camp, Woodchuck Bill, that would talk to the kids.
Oh, yeah. You remember that's 10 years ago, at least. 10 years ago, minimum.
Yeah, and the secret of your success, in my opinion, is your timing. You have highs and you have lows. You get all worked up, and then you mellow out, and you get real philosophic. And then you'll go on a rant, and you'll scream and yell, and that's what people really want in radio, the highs and the lows.
Well, if you ever listen to a great classical symphony, if you listen to music, and if you listen to a great classical symphony, is it not the same?
Absolutely. And you know who told me that? There was a radio announcer in the 50s on WITH in Baltimore named Maurice Hulbert. He had a show called the Hot Rod Rocket Ship Show. With all
I love it.
The fans.
That's great. What, he told you about his manic depression?
Well, no. I was on my way to Baltimore 30 years later, and I got thinking about him because I was in radio a little bit. And I said, I wonder if I can look up Hot Rod. And I looked up in the phone book. I went to the address, and this nurse came out. And she says, I don't know if he's well enough to talk to you, but come on in. So anyway, this guy comes out, little shriveled up guy in Bermuda shorts. And get this. Here's the guy that made his living with radio, actually worked his way up, actually owned two stations, but he also took payola from cigarettes, L&M. He was always hawking L&M, Ooh Papa Kim, L&M.
And what, he got busted for plugola?
Wilter, and he got throat cancer.
Oh!
And to talk to me, he had to press on his...
He had one of those larynx buzzers.
Yeah, and I said...
I had a guy. No, that's an amazing story. I mean, I was a kid. There was a man in my father's store who had a... The brother had a buzzer, a neck buzzer. Now, as a kid, you don't know what that's a tragic thing. It was, like, weird. You know, the guy would say, oh, hallelujah. And he would play with the buzzer for the neck. And the kids would look at it and didn't know what it was. So he would take it and press it against your arm and turn it on and give you a vibration. Or touch it to your head. See, it was a different age. You could even joke about a disability.
I asked him, I said...
All right, thanks for the call. It's not here. He took over the show already. I was listening to him. I was ready to settle down and have a pell-mell. That guy was a good caller. Very nice. Two more minutes, I would have gone to sleep listening to the caller. Not that he was boring. It was nice and interesting. I wish I could settle back now for 2 hours and enjoy the day. But I can't. I'm driving the bus, okay? Yeah, no, so let me think. So he said, which story did he like? Who was that? Oh, Woodchuck Bill. Is it too boring? It's a one-minute job. Okay. Bang, 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 back in time. Here we go. Michael's 11. Catskill Mountains, Mountaindale, New York. Broken down old bungalow colony. That wasn't so bad. But on this, it was next to a creek in Spring Glen, New York. And 11, 12-year-old boys and girls. It was paradisical. People don't know what a bungalow colony was. It was a series of little cottages that families came up from New York together from the same neighborhood and rented. I had a little bedroom, a little bathroom, a little kitchen. And basically, you recreated your own little community in the mountains for the summer to get away from the heat, right? On this property, there was an old broken-down barn up on the hill, I can remember to this day. And in this barn, there lived a caretaker named Woodchuck Bill, with his wife, no less, his wife, you know, in-law, I don't know what she was. And he was a rugged kind of guy, you know, like Davy Crockett, but a huge belly on him. Big, big, big beer belly. And she was, actually, if I remember correctly, she was straight and tall and very handsome, but, you know, you wouldn't say beautiful. I mean, no makeup, you know, jeans, and just a tough woman who lived up there with him. Even he needed a woman, you know what I'm saying? No one should live alone. So the kids would gravitate to him because he was unusual, and he would tell us stories. And we'd all sit around, and he would tell us these stories. Why, when I've been through hurricanes and tornadoes, and he'd tell us all these great stories of what he'd been through, semen and this and that. And then he would line us up, and he'd say, I want to show you how strong I am, kids. Come over here. I want each one of you to line up and punch me in the stomach. Lucky there were no strong, really powerful kids. Today there were 12-year-olds probably could have broken his breadbasket. But we all would rear back, and with our skinny little arms, we whang, and he'd say, all right, next. And nope, and he never got hurt from it, you know. But anyway, he hunted woodchucks, and he had dead woodchucks skinned and hanging up there that he ate. We said, well, what do you eat? I don't even know what the guy lived on. He made a little money there from the people who owned that little, you know. And he ate woodchucks, and he ate whatever, hunted rabbits, deer. And that's what he did. So to a child, Woodchuck Bill is, you know, something fabulous. Today, Woodchuck Bill would probably be on welfare. Today, Woodchuck Bill would have been working for Obama somewhere, maybe in HHS, or as a community organizer in Springland, New York. I don't know. I'll be back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
That has a special meaning to me because it was an ad from the old days where they'd have a short fellow come out. They call them little people today. I guess it was a midget. Dressed up as a bellhop, and I don't know why they used him to sell Philip Morris. Like, he'd come out with a little tray, like a call for Philip Morris. Who would I know? My father smoked the cigarettes, and that was the ad. Why would a normal man want a cigarette that a midget promoted? I don't know. I guess it made you shorter. I don't get it. What's the psychology of that? Call for Philip Morris. So now what you think about an advertising? Many of you have watched Mad Men, right? So an advertising jingle. Why would you use a midget to sell something? Nothing against midgets. It's just a genetic thing. But how does a midget make you want to buy a product? I don't get it. Unless it's an Austin Mini Cooper. What's the reason for... What does that have to do with a cigarette? I don't get it. The midget... Is there a psychologist, an advertising psychologist in the audience, who could explain to me the magic of that ad? A midget would come out dressed up in a bellhop's uniform with a tray. And on it, he would have a note. Because in the old days in hotels, in a fancy hotel... They come out and say, call for Philip Morris. You know, like a telephone call. There were no cell phones. I don't know what made you important, you mean? Like if you smoked, you might get a midget coming up to you saying there was a call for you? I can't put two and two together. I hope you can. It's the Hall of Fame day for me. I hope you're enjoying it. I'll be back with the latest news and more right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
We will continue the celebration here all day. For me, it is a celebration, but it's your victory. I told you that if you voted for me during the inauguration speech, which we'll play in this hour, by the way, I would thank you and make sure that in the archives forever, as long as there is a Radio Hall of Fame Museum, Borders, Language, and Culture would go into that museum. And I want you to listen to the speech in a few minutes and see if I fulfilled my promise to you. This is the official speech that I will be playing. Here's a news story, though. Obama, if you can believe this, is telling Trump to stand up to Russia. The psychopath who just destroyed the Democrat Party, let's hope for 50 years, the bug-eyed psycho, has the nerve in Berlin, speaking next to the woman who was destroying Germany, doing more damage to the German people than you could ever imagine, invading her own nation, just as Hitler invaded surrounding nations. She's Hitler in reverse, invading her own nation with Muslims. She gives a joint conference with Obama, and he says that Trump should stand up to Russia. Can you believe this? Can you believe that this warmonger on the way out the door wants to see a war with Russia? Thank God that Trump turned the war fever down. So, yeah. Now, we hear that nationalists and isolationists are the warmongers, but it turns out that the internationalists are the real warmongers. They invade their own nations with foreigners. That's all. In Berlin, President Obama will meet with the leaders of France, Italy, Spain, and Britain. I wonder what he's going to give away, you know, what's left after Greece. Here's an advice to Mr. Trump. Never, 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 ever take advice from the snake. The snake is a warmonger. The snake is surrounded by feminists who hate Putin because Putin is the last man standing on the planet who they couldn't make him bend down to them. You think that I'm making that up? I've studied this in great detail. Okay, what do you want to talk about? We got into the speech. Should we do it now or in the next segment? Where is the speech? It's a 2-minute, 30-second speech, right? I could give it to him now. No, let's not do the speech. Everyone's waiting. I want them to call their friends. I want to take some calls. Robert on KKOH out of Reno. Go ahead, please. You're calling from the Flamethrower Station. KKOH, heard as far away as Canada. Go ahead, please.
Michael, how are you today? This is a great day. I am your longest listener, and I can prove it because I would take the night shift so I could listen to Dr. Wattenberg when you were on KGO. And the night you came and did your first show, the young comedian Brian Copeland introduced you, and he talked.
Right, listen, what is it? You're a promoter for KGO. What are you throwing all these names around for?
It's just I'm 55, and I have been.
But nobody knows these people. Nobody knows who they are. Thank you for the trolling. I appreciate it. The screener didn't know you were going to do that. You don't have to step on my party like that, do you? Can't you just be straight up? You have to push people nobody ever wants to listen to. Okay? Just forget about it. It's my show. WABC, Keith, line 6. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael. I'm remembering my favorite skit you did was about online dating. And you talked about how, you know, whatever people put, you cut through the bull. If somebody put they were athletic, a woman said she's athletic, you said flat chest.
Well, in those days, there were ads in the local newspapers like man seeking woman, woman seeking man, man seeking man, woman seeking woman, woman seeking man and woman, that kind of thing. So I'd go through women seeking men and men seeking women, and I would read the ads, and I would translate them for you. So if she said, Rubenesque likes long walks on the beach at night, I would say that means she's 350 pounds and she's psychotic, probably homeless.
That's exactly right. I remember...
But it wasn't just misogyny, because I did it the other way. If a guy wrote, sensitive, autistic type, likes holding hands, long nights by the fireplace, I said he's probably a pyromaniac who'll rape you in your own bedroom.
That's it. And I was going through a tough time with my wife. It was years ago. And just sitting in the car listening to that made me really laugh.
I wish we could find some of those ads from those days. There's no such ads anymore.
No, hilarious.
Now they're so graphic you could vomit.
Oh, yeah.
They don't even write ads like that. They show their private parts now. They don't even describe themselves. They show a picture of them. They just show a picture of what's, you know, what God meant. That's it, what they put up. That's the dating site now. A guy shows his this and a woman shows that. That's a date now.
It's all Michael.
There's no brain and no soul, no nothing. He's not even looking for a soulmate anymore. If it was, if it wasn't a family show, I'd rhyme the word soulmate. Now, I can't do that, though.
Mike, it's so great to talk to you. I've been listening to you for years. I teach high school English in New York, and I'm surrounded by liberals. You keep me sane.
You know, you talk about the psychosis of teaching today. Somebody sent this to me. You're not going to believe this. I'm getting reports around the nation of the weaklings and the liberal psychos. They're sending out notices to students about the election and how they have special psychological services, dogs that they can touch after the election, special dog treatments, and that the students are also wrecked and that we all have to figure it out. And you can see the psychological counseling service to support your fellow students, contact student affairs, and help your fellow student get through what happened during the election. Free comforting food, safe spaces, and supportive resources. Can you believe this is what's necessary with the drug-addicted children in our colleges today?
It's ridiculous, and it's not just college. My son got an email home. I got it on my phone from his high school about, we just want to let you know that we care about America and the voting process and the democratic process, and, you know, kids are adjusting to this election cycle. We never got an email like that with Obama. Never got an email like that with Obama.
How come we didn't need a service dog after Obama won?
Exactly.
I could have used a service animal to go with Teddy after Obama won. I could have used one for the last 8 years.
Me too.
Why are these leftist fascists so weak at the end of the day? What are they all dying over? What, that the world isn't giving them everything they want? They never lost anything before? No, this is a product of a sick society that has ruled out any competition in their lives. And so they've never lost at a ball game. They never lost in a wrestling match. They never lost in a spelling bee. So when they lose an election, they think it's personal.
Yep. And they're just taught a certain way, Mike. They don't know anything. And if I try to tell them truth, I get written up. And, if I talk about...
How do you survive in New York City teaching? What do you teach? What subject can you say?
High school English, yeah.
English in New York, they still teach it? It's not considered a racist language?
You gotta be real careful. My principal, thank God, is conservative, believe it or not. Now, he has to kind of pretend he's not, but at least he's conservative. He's probably listening to me right now, so I gotta be careful.
Yeah, but we don't have to be careful anymore. You know what? Let the Prague start being real careful. It's time for them to start looking over their shoulder. We won! They lost! They ought to be careful!
I agree.
How's that? How's that for a little geschrei from the heart? I'm sick of them. I'm not running and hiding from them. It's time for them to run and hide. Put that down on a piece of paper. 8 years I had to put up with the psycho in the White House and the psychopaths everywhere I turned. Let them run and hide. We won. We're near. We're here. We're everywhere. You lost. Go to your safe spaces, you little creeps. Thank you for helping me today. I really appreciate the psychological service you just did for me. I got it out of my system. I'm feeling better. The glue is wearing off from the dental work. And when I come back, I'll take your calls at 855-407-2822. Do I have to watch one more story about the Mata Hari of News Corporation, the blonde Mata Hari? Do I have to watch this backstabbing witch one more day? Do you know who I'm talking about? The one who tried to destroy Trump and lost? How did she become such a monster in such a short period of time? You know, I know how, because she always was. All right? What is she, Hillary Clinton standing? I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
Here's a weird story. Nothing to do with the Hall of Fame Award or my dental work. It's weird. It just came out. Did this astronaut warn of aliens before attempting suicide? I know I'm going to get the night callers now, the night crawlers. Every time you bring up UFOs, that's the end of a radio show. I don't pay much attention to it. My feeling is simple on it. If there are aliens amongst us, hello, what can I say? Well, hello, enjoy yourself. Hope you like the steak. What am I supposed to worry about who's an alien? So there's an alien, so they all voted for Obama. Sometimes I think he was an alien, the way he behaved. He certainly didn't behave like an American, did he? He behaved like an alien trying to destroy a country. French astronaut Claudie Hanere waves inside the landing capsule near the village of Zarim. A shocking video claims France's first female astronaut screamed, "Earth must be warned!" before she attempted suicide. Claudie Hanere, 59, reportedly had to be restrained after yelling the eerie caution prior to falling into a coma from an overdose of sleeping pills. A six-minute YouTube conspiracy film by UFO Mania has resurfaced this week examining a story. In 1993, esteemed scientist Claudie was a backup crew member for the 93 Mir Altair mission, which included her future husband Jean-Pierre Hagneré. She made it to the MIR station in 96 as part of the Russian-French Cassiopeia mission, and in 01 became the first European woman to visit the International Space Station. The asteroid 135268 Hagneré is named after Claudie and her husband. So then she comes out of space work, she enters French politics. She works as a minister delegate for research and new technologies. Minister this, minister that. She leaves biology, politics, works in a bio lab at the Pasteur Institute. And that's where the story gets strange. In 08, it was widely reported that Claudie had to be rushed to the hospital after allegedly taking an overdose of sleeping pills. It was reported that she was found conscious but had to be restrained while screaming, "Earth must be warned," before lapsing into a coma. What year was this? Oh, wait, that's about when Obama. Maybe she's trying to warn us. Because he is awfully thin. I mean, when you look. Claudie blamed the incident on burnout syndrome and is now the director of the Cité des Sciences et de l'Industrie, the largest science museum in Europe. However, alien enthusiasts believe she's trying to warn the Earth about life in outer space. What's there to warn? What could you do if they're here? So they're here? Let them enjoy a corned beef sandwich. That's an interesting thing. If there were aliens amongst us, would they be vegans or would they be meat eaters? You got to think about that. Maybe veganism is a conspiracy of the aliens to turn us into weaklings because there's no gluten holding us together anymore. Take a look at the gluten-free people out there. There's nothing holding them together. They need safe spaces just to go for a sandwich. In fact, if they go to a diner and you're eating a piece of meat or a tuna sandwich, they have to look for a space safe. They can't even be around you eating the food. That's how crazy they become. So now that I think about it, it makes sense. All right, what are you going to do? So the woman, Sophus House in Poland, there. What? The mysterious death of conspiracy Max Spires in October may have triggered the latest interest. Spires was found dead on a sofa at a friend's house in Poland days after warning his mom to investigate if anything happened to him. Friends also claim he had vomited a black liquid before his death. Well, what does that mean? I don't know. Poland, black liquid? Could have been the kielbasa, you know, like a bad dose of kielbasa. Didn't have to be an alien. Just a blood sausage that was tainted. Have turned everything into an alien. That's all. Where are we? Okay, Joe, the online guy who I saved from suicide. Joe, welcome to the program. Joe, did I really save you from suicide, or were you pulling my leg?
No, Dr. Savage, that was a real event, and I think you know as when you get those chills, I get them. You know as well as I do, God was involved, and it was, you know, that day I called the show, I had about 10% charge on my phone, and it didn't even ring. Robert picked it up, and it was like, you know, this is a national show, millions of people listening, I right in on the first, you know, it didn't even ring, and it was an amazing day, and it was life-changing.
But why were you despondent that day? What, just in a nutshell, without going into a long dirge, what had happened that you wanted to end your life?
Well, like I had told you before, you know, money problems, and, I mean, big money problems. And then, you know, taxes, the house was behind, all these things. And, you know, what was odd was you guys helped us out, and we do thank you. And, by the way, congratulations on the Hall of Fame. What an honor. You deserve it.
Well, let me, how much money did we raise for you by mentioning it?
You guys sent us $10,000.
And that saved your life?
Well, you know, the problems were large, and, but what that did was it was a Band-Aid, but you know, the most craziest thing happened March the following year. I was involved in a near fatal car accident. A lady was texting and driving, and she was doing about 55 through an intersection. Red light. She ran the red light and T-boned me. I went off the road, hit a big street light that fell down. The whole thing was amazing that I even lived through it. And after that wreck, things just, you know, after the day of the show, my whole take on money and all that changed completely. And, you know, I smell the roses now, and I eat the cheeseburger once in a while. You know what I mean? And
yes, I do.
It's life.
So, in other words, you have a zest for life again.
Well, you know, I love life, and I'm a writer, too, and, you know, I've done a few little things, and that's my real... I love that
stuff. All right, so I'm glad to hear that this show and my listeners helped turn you around that day, and it's a true story. And that's a true story I wanted them to hear on this day of my induction into the Radio Hall of Fame. And, Joe, you'll be, because of this call, you will now be permanently wed to me in this tape. This is going to be a tape that I'm going to put together, and this call will be on it. All I can say is thank you for telling everybody the difference that they made in your life. And remember this, there is never a reason to commit suicide. Never. It comes soon enough anyway, Joe. Life ends soon enough anyway. There's no rush. Okay? Be here or be nowhere.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation borders language culture. Right. Borders language culture, if only that could make it into Trump Tower. If only we could get the message of borders language and culture into Trump Tower, where all the rhinos are now circling the wagons to make certain that only rhinos enter. Even USA Today has an article, why it may not matter if President Trump keeps his promises. I mean, George Bush said, read my lips, no new taxes. He was never reelected. Obama lied when he said, amongst other things, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. What he really meant was, if you like your illegal immigrant, you can keep your illegal immigrant. That's what Obama really meant. He didn't mean keep. If you like your illegal, you can keep your illegal. So, here we go. Here we go. Even they're already saying, don't worry about it. They said it right at the top. Right at the top. They're already saying it doesn't matter. He's gone soft on the wall, so it might be a fence. It says, studies show that most presidential candidates have honored most of their campaign promises. Once elected, however, everyone compromises, backtracks, or fudges to some extent. But not Obama, of course, in the article. He was perfect. It says, judging from his comments during the past week, Trump said he wouldn't necessarily build a wall along every inch of the Mexican border, would focus deportation efforts not on all illegal immigrants, but on those with criminal records. Wait a minute. That's right out of my book. I said first deport those in prison. One-third of our prison population are illegals. No one ever said deport illegal immigrants. I never said it. I said deport criminal illegal aliens in prison. So Trump is actually acting what he actually said he would do. But he did say he retained some redeeming facets of Obamacare. That is after he met the thin one. Maybe he found out that if he took them off it, you know, it could cost more because they're going to get it for free anyway. Anyway, I don't want to do this for today. Maybe another day, okay? I want to do this. It is now 1:35 on the West Coast, 4:35 on the East Coast. And in a few short hours in Chicago, Illinois, the presentations will be made inside the Radio Hall of Fame. And I, for reasons I cannot discuss, I think you can pretty much figure out, I'm not there. I sent a video that we produced in lieu of my appearance. The entire leader, all the leadership of the industry will be there. I'm very sorry I can't be there, but I can't. And so I'm here on a microphone, which is good enough for right now. I want you to listen to what will be played tonight. You're hearing it first, right now, live. My audience did it. My audience gets it first. Here is what's coming tonight in Chicago in that esteemed museum. Hey, thanks for having me at the National Radio Hall of Fame. This is the greatest award of my life. It's the culmination of 22 years in the radio business and many, many years as a writer and a dreamer and a thinker. There are many people I have to thank tonight, and I'll get to all of them. I want to thank Dennis Green in particular for nominating me, and I want to thank all the listeners of the Savage Nation who voted me in. Against all odds, the outsider, the underdog won. Why? Borders, language, culture. But let me begin at the beginning. I want to thank my mother, who's in heaven with God, for having encouraged me to
be an announcer in the first grade in the Bronx. You see, the reason I was the announcer in the first grade in the Bronx is because I had a suit. No one else in the school had a blue suit. So she said, go be the announcer, Michael. Well, I got up in front of the audience, and the sea of children, instead of intimidating me, it encouraged me. It made me happy. And I realized I had a capacity to speak to audiences right then and there. And of course, along the way, I did book tours for all the books I had written. And every time I would stop on a radio tour, inevitably there'd be a radio host somewhere along the way, up in Seattle or in Los Angeles. They say, hey, you really are good. You have a great voice and persona. You belong on the radio. That was like saying you belong as an astronaut. How does an author become a radio host? Well, as the years went on, 94, I sent tapes out to several hundred stations, and I wound up on KGO in San Francisco. I was a phenomenon, being a conservative speaker. I should say really an independent mind in a sea of liberalism. Pardon the audience. That should be a laugh line. And then I was offered a daytime job, and they gave me an offer I couldn't refuse. And I had to leave a rather lucrative career in other fields, and I took it. And it's been a roller coaster ever since. And here we are. I remember Mother taking me to Radio City Music Hall as a little boy. To this day, I can remember the magic. Behind the scenes at radio. And what did I see? The man said, here is how we make thunder in a radio show. And he hit a sheet of tin or metal with something, and there was thunder. And here is how we have the horses for the Lone Ranger that I grew up with. And there he was doing something on top of a sound stand with some kind of hooves. And I thought there were horses in the studio, and I was taken away by the magic of radio. And to me, because I grew up in the age of radio, never forget that. I'm a little older than most of the people in radio, as you might notice. Young at heart, probably younger than most of them. In fact, I do more than almost anybody half my age. Take that and smoke it if you don't mind. But the fact of the matter is, yeah, radio, amazing. Still with me, still love it. The most magical of all mediums. Why? Because I grew up on radio. I would lie in my father's lap. He'd be smoking the Philip Morris, listening to shows like The Green Hornet way back in the 40s. And he'd say, you know, Michael, I like radio more than I like movies. And I'd say, why, Dad? He said, because with radio, you have to use your imagination. With the movies, they tell you what your imagination should be thinking. And I never forgot that. To me, with my shows, there's still the magic of the theater. Radio is still the magic theater of the mind. And if you listen to my show from time to time and put aside the stereotypes, you'll find out that my ability to tell stories and take people on a mind trip with me are what separates me from myself, so I don't get trapped too much in politics. And now that the election is over, God, I can't even tell you where I'm going to go from now, but it's not going to be politics all the time. It's going to be a lot more than politics. It's going to be what I began with. Sure, borders, language, and culture is the theme, but so are stories, stories, stories. And I want to tell the audience another thing, which is that radio is looked down upon by many people, let's say in the tech industry. Oh, it's a medium of the past. I think it's the medium of the present and the future. And long after some of the other industries have gone, come and gone, there will always be the magic of that radio in the hands of the individual, the most personal of all mediums, radio. It will be with us forever. And I want to thank all of you once again for being here tonight at the National Radio Hall of Fame in the lovely city of Chicago, and all of the people who made this possible. Thank you again, and good night.
Savage.
Well, you heard it first. I delivered it to you first. I hope no one is offended, but the fact of the matter is, because I could not be in attendance at this important ceremony, I sent a video in my place, which will go into the archives of the Hall of Fame, and that's it. You're going to, you know, if you go to that museum downstream to listen to, you know that they have the tape of the Hindenburg disaster in that museum, the National Radio Hall of Fame. I only learned that last night. It's an amazing place. They have tapes from Orson Welles. They have tapes from the greats, Walter Winchell. And, of course, they even have the Hindenburg tape, the original radio tape. Oh, the humanity, the humanity, the humanity. Remember that famous tape? When a reporter was watching the Hindenburg dirigible land in New Jersey and blew up, caught fire, and he watched it catch fire and people jumping out of it. And the reporter broke down on air, that famous radio tape. It's in the National Radio Hall of Fame. And I'm hoping to be able to donate
my audio sound to the museum at some point, but I am still enmeshed in trying to get what is mine that was awarded to me both by arbitrators, then by a federal judge, then by the Supreme Court. My tapes, my life, but the individual who is holding them against the law, against common decency, will not release them. And now you know something about my fight, my battle, what I had to go through for all those years. I've never met people like this on the planet. In my life, I've met some great people and some terrible people. I would have to say that these people who are doing this to you, holding what is not their property, holding what belongs to posterity, are amongst the worst people I've ever met in my entire life. That's my opinion. Now let's go to some of the callers. Jeremy on KLIF in Dallas, Texas. Jeremy, what's on your mind?
Hey, Doc. Congratulations. I've called in before. I'm the psychotherapist in Fort Worth, and I wanted to tell you about the little person in the Philip Morris ad, the psychology behind that real quickly. And
you know, why would they have used a midget holding a tray saying, call for Philip Morris? Why would that make someone buy a product?
Because the second I see that image, that's the first image that I see, I immediately make an assessment that I am bigger, I am faster, I am stronger, I'm more successful, I'm handsome, I'm not that person, I'm everything that person is, and boom, that's the cigarette. It takes a few seconds before you see what the...
What do you mean? The cigarette makes you that better person?
No, when you see that person who's, I don't know what the right word is to say, I don't want to get anybody in trouble. When you see the little guy, you immediately make a judgment call, and you make this comparative assessment. And the first thing you think of is, I'm bigger, I'm taller, I'm healthier, I'm normal.
So in other words, they were basically ridiculing the midget in the ad to make the average Joe feel immediately bigger and stronger.
Yeah, and then in the very next image that you see, because most commercials function in what's called the rule of thirds on the screen, the very next image that you would notice once you make that assessment is the cigarette. And so immediately your brain links those two things together. I'm all these things, boom, cigarette.
Oh, my God. Look at that.
Nothing is wasted in advertising. Every frame.
No, it's pretty. I had no idea why my father would smoke the cigarettes. I said, he doesn't want to be a midget. I don't get it.
And then the other thing I was going to tell you is when you were talking about all the safe spaces and all this stuff for these students and these kids, you know, one thing that's getting lost, because a lot of the schools are taking a lot of heat for this because of what they're providing, and it's very easy to get lost in the fact what's really going on, and that these kids need that. That's the problem. It's not the problem that they're being coddled and they don't want it. The problem is they actually need these things. This actually is that traumatic to them. And part of the reason, if you look culturally, you know, we've been fighting a war for a long time, and this idea, in other words, these guys are competing with everything else that they're not. They're not soldiers. They're not fighting. They're not all of these sorts of things. And I think there's a tremendous amount of guilt with that. And I think that, you know, when we're during wartime, men make assessments all the time of who they are and what they are. And, you know, there's a lot of soldiers coming back doing a lot of amazing things and have a lot of problems. And this is their way of identifying with that culture. Well, I've got problems, too. I've got PTSD, too. You know, cops are shooting people. You know,
what do you mean? The students, the little snowflake students, are pretending that they're back from a war because the country didn't vote the way they wanted it to?
Well, what I'm saying is they're trying to normalize their male experience, and they're never going to be able to compete with the red-blooded American soldier. And these people are coming back.
Well, I have a different opinion. I think it's time for America to stand up and scream at them and say, act like a man and act like a woman. Stop acting like little babies. You're not infants in a cradle anymore. You live in a country, you lost the election, grow up and move on. And stop crybabying every second. Okay? Move on. You lost the election, now live with it.
I'm with you on that. I mean, these things were occurring for this group of population. This stuff was occurring before the election.
But Jeremy, these are the kids who the teachers would not let them play tag because it was too rough.
Yeah.
They wouldn't let them play a game of tackle because it was too rough. They eliminated grades in many of these stupid schools because there were winners and losers and those in between. And so they were led to believe everyone is equal, and we all know not everyone is equal. And now they lose an election, they can't even stand up to an election. How do we ever fix a nation that is so broken, Jeremy?
It's just like Abraham, man. You got to start at home. You know, until parents take responsibility for the way things are turning out, you know, until they start taking responsibility and changing things in the home, I mean, that's the only place you're going to be able to change it. That's what God told Abraham. You know, you save your home, you save the village. You save the village.
Here I have in my hand a letter from Santa Rosa Community College and in Petaluma, and they're offering children to speak with someone about your post-election anxiety. You can visit Student Psychological Services. Read tips on managing post-election stress at the JED Foundation website. For questions about what you can do to support your fellow students, contact Student Affairs. Can you believe this? This comes from Dr. Frank Chung, superintendent slash president, Santa Rosa Junior College. This is really, it's so weak and is so embarrassing. They want to create safe spaces for children because Hillary Clinton didn't win the election. Can you believe this, Jeremy?
Well, yeah, but you know what? You want to hear something crazy? I think that is all part of the adult or the academic class or the leadership adult class is saying, see, we're right. This is a problem. Look what it's doing to these people. And they're almost...
Wait, they're even offering free comfort foods, safe spaces, and supportive resources in Petaluma, California. Wait, it gets even idiotic. Resources will be available from Student Success, Health Services, Intercultural Center, Positive Images, LGBTQ, Dream Center, Financial Aid, and more. Can you believe the waste of money? Instead of teaching children how to do things, how to think, how to learn, they're teaching them how to be weak? Thank you for the call, Jeremy. What a world we're living in. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Think about it, okay? 5 days a week on an average of, what, 50 weeks a year with weeks vacation. What is that? How many shows is that? 5 shows a week, 50 weeks a year, 250 shows a year times 10 years is 2,500. So it's over 5,000 shows. After 5,000 radio shows, Michael Savage wins induction into the National Radio Hall of Fame. That's what this is. It didn't happen overnight. It's the old Jackie Mason joke. You know, he's been schlepping in nightclubs that no one ever heard of his whole life for 20 years. And all of a sudden, they say he's an overnight success. That's not how it is. Everybody will tell you that the road that they're on is a long road and a hard road. Make no mistake about it. There are no easy roads in life. In fact, if success comes to you too soon, that is not a blessing. It is a curse. If you look back at all the child stars who've been cursed with early success, you'll see what I mean. The struggle is the success. Never forget that. The struggle itself is the success. Success is a stale finale. For those of you who will be with me for another hour, be here because I got a lot more coming right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
Thank you for listening. It's each and every listener that makes for an audience. There's no such thing as a big, broad audience in radio. It's an individual thing, and every single person listening to this program today or yesterday or 20 years ago or every day for 20 years, that's what builds an audience, that's what builds a program, and that's what makes the show happen. And I want to thank you for listening today, this special day, and it's only one day. I'm not going to do it again. But I'm not going to apologize for talking about being inducted into the National Radio Hall of Fame just because there are some people out there who are just green with envy. What should I do? Say I didn't win the award? I did, and thank you. Now, we've got a lot of things to play for you. I can't wait to get to one of them because I have never heard this one. And yesterday someone called and said, Michael, my favorite thing that you did was your interview with a Jewish gangster in June of 2010. I don't remember the call. I don't remember the call. Can I hear clip number four, Robert? Let's hear a piece of it. I want to hear this great day.
San Diego, Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Michael, you want to talk about gangsters? I'm a gangster. Benny Siegel was my godfather. I come from Brownsville. I grew up in the, I was about 18 in the 60s, very early 60s. So I grew up through the late 40s, 50s, 60s. Let me tell you something about the gangsters and the Jewish gangsters of now. Well, first of all, I don't know of any Jewish gangsters now. I'm retired. You want to read about me, you read Sammy the Bull's book. I'm the guy that got him made, okay? I was his partner. Okay, so I don't know about Jewish gangsters now, but back then, what made Jewish gangsters and Italian gangsters and Irish gangsters, okay, part of the greatest trio that actually built this country, you understand? There was an honor system, a tremendous honor system. I used to sit in the house, my mother would have Murder Incorporated guys come in, okay, Gambino family. I was in the Gambino Gallo War, I was in the Profaci Gallo War. And these guys, when they gave you their word, they kept their word. Okay, this Rahm Emanuel, I don't even know what he is. He's some kind of generic Jew. Okay, let me tell you something. It's true, the story that Benny Siegel was going to actually try to kill Mussolini. He went to Italy. Okay, and he explored every aspect of it. Mm. I knew Charlie Workman. He killed Dutch Schultz. Okay, I've known some people. I knew Red Levine. He killed Maranzano. Okay.
So we've checked it out. So this story is true, what you're telling us. I want people to understand we've done a little checking and... There is direct veracity in what you're saying. All right, so you're a hard man, you're a tough man, you're an ex-criminal, you're a murderer, ex-murderer. You've done every bad thing on earth, and you say that you come out at the other side because you beg God to not kill you when you had sepsis in your spine, right? Isn't that when it happened?
Yes, sir.
Now, when you say God broke you, did you have an awakening? Did God actually appear in front of your eyes in that jail, in that hospital?
I'm going to tell you something. That happened to me in Rikers Island years ago when I took my little girl. She was being abused in a foster home. But that actually happened to me. But that's a very heavy experience. But in the hospital in Corcoran, yes, I had a second. In other words, God, in a sense, God spoke to me, and he let me know, listen, you're headed for a hard, hard time, okay? Now, you got a choice now. You can either die in this prison, okay, or... You keep having faith in me, and I'll bring you through it. And I, that hard time, a couple of days after, I had the encounter with the CO, okay, who never came back to my room again. What happened is I was released. I had died that night, and the nurse told me she brought me back. 2 days later, I was released to an ambulance. They brought me to UCSD. And with the great care I got in UCSD, in 1 year, I was there for a year, semi-coma, okay? I was there for a year. I had a doctor tell me that he gave me the operation, but I was going to die anyway. And I told him, listen, I've been in hell that it burned the shoes off your feet in the first 5 minutes. I spent years there. There's nobody going to kill me before God. God knows when I'll die, not you, brother. He wouldn't operate on me. I'm not going to give you his name, let him go on his career. But anyway, yes, God came to me and spoke to me, okay? And believe me, he gave me an awakening.
Well, Michael, this has been a very... a big quick ride down the rapids with you, and I must say that I hope that somebody was touched by Michael Hardy on today's Savage Nation.
Savage.
I don't remember the show. I vaguely remember it, but that's only one part of three which we cannot play today. It's amazing. And remember I said to you before the election, I'm going to do a God book, God willing, next year. This has to be in it. I'm going to ask you, Robert or Doug, to take that piece and anything else that mentions God and send it up to the wonderful individual who transcribes my shows for me, because I don't want to lose this one. I'm so interested in what he said. I actually would like, Robert, if you could you go back to yesterday when you had the three pieces of the Jewish gangster? Because this is a combination piece, isn't it? Well, we'll save it for another show, maybe next week. I'd like to hear the early part when he talks about his days at Murder Incorporated, you know, not after he got sick and had sepsis, because he had my attention. It sounded real to me. It didn't sound real to you. I don't think he was making that up. He didn't sound like a guy playing to be a tough guy. How did he get the sepsis? Was it, did he explain in the interview what happened? Was it from an accident or a beating? What happened? No one knows. I don't know what happened to him. Robert, do you know if you listen to it? Nobody knows, but we'll find it. Well, anyway, that was that. That's one of the great interviews in this archives of the Savage Nation. I'm going to have to look into the others. In fact, I want to get them for tonight and listen to them, Robert. Have Doug send them to me. I want the whole show now. I want Doug to send me the whole show from 6/10/2010. Now, here's another one that is one of my, I think, most important programs over the years. And it's a terrible day. It's a day that shall live in infamy. It's 9/11/01, the day that the Islamo-fascists slammed into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. And this is what I did when I opened my show on the Savage Nation.
Ladies and gentlemen of the United States of America, the radical Muslim world has declared war on America. We are at war. We are at war. Attention, America. This is your Pearl Harbor. This is your Pearl Harbor. In the World Trade Center today, a World Trade Center that no longer exists, demolished by two hijacked airliners, taken over by radical Muslims. Ladies and gentlemen, you will never forget this day as long as you live. It is time for you to come out of your sleep. It is time for you to put your hats on forward. It is time for you to throw your pornography in a bonfire. It is time for you to turn off your sports. It is time for you to turn off your entertainment. You will not have a nation unless you awaken and stand up like a man. What can be done? I want to remind you that we are at war. We do not know the exact count of fatalities at the World Trade Center. As you well know, radical Muslims hijacked these two planes. We have intelligence that two connected to bin Laden said over private airwaves. We hit two targets. We hit two targets. Those two targets, of course, are the World Trade Center in New York City, no longer existent. I'm going to remind you that the United States went to war when Pearl Harbor was attacked. Ladies and gentlemen, what will it take for this country to close the borders, to reassert English as our language, to stop the flood of asylees from every garbage can in the world? This is the result of a weakened nation. Ladies and gentlemen, we are at war. What must be done? Where are Bush and Cheney? What emergency steps are you taking? Are you offended at Bush's absence? This is a day that will live in infamy, but I want to tell you this. Many of you are frightened in the false assumption that terrorism cannot be fought against. That is the wrong assumption. It is the wrong conclusion. That is what you're going to hear from the defeatists. Maybe you've dismissed me as a right-wing nut. When I've been telling you for years, close the borders. Where do you think the terrorists came from? How do you think they got into our country? You morons, I've been telling you that ultra-tolerance is killing us. Well, the day has come. This is your Pearl Harbor. You're going to live with it just as I am.
Savage. I got to tell you something. It got me off my seat. I'm not sitting right now. I'm standing. It made me want to join a group and save the country. And I hope that you understand that on 9/11/2001, the world changed and America came together. And then slowly but surely, we forgot what had happened. Drip, 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 the media started to tell us, hush, hush, my darling, don't say Muslim. Hush, hush, my darling, don't say Islam. Hush, hush, my darling, don't even say terror. Hush, hush, my darling, it didn't even happen. And slowly but surely, we got an imposter in the White House who for almost one decade has now turned the nation against itself as though we have an autoimmune disease amongst the people. One side fighting the other. It's amazing that we even survived it and God's hand moved on this election and elected a man who just might turn things around. And I say just and I say might. On that note, I'll take a quick break and invite you to call on this important day for the radio show that you are listening to. I'll be back at 855-407-282 to take your calls.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. No, it's been a long day for me. I got to tell you, yesterday,
I went to the dentist after the show. I told you. I thought it was going to be a minor little something or other. He was going to do this or that. I never knew what a crown was. Or a crown roast. I don't know what a crown is. I never had it done. So I had a tooth with a little teeny little sliver of a hairline crack in the front. So the other dentist said, go see this one for the crown. I forget a crown. I don't know what it was. I didn't. The next thing I know, I look in the mirror. There's a stump like a fang. He whittled it down to a stump in my eye. I said, what did you do to me? He said, oh, we're going to put this on. I said, why'd you remove all of the enamel and the whole thing? There's nothing there. She explained they make a fake tooth out of plastic and they put it in and this and that. I was an hour and a half, like somebody was inside my head with like leaf blowers and jackhammers. No anesthesia. He didn't even warn me. I didn't even have an aspirin. So I have a trick where I squeeze my hand. I learned it from someone who had to go through childbirth and learned it from someone. You squeeze all your energy into a hand. So I go one hand to the other. I count to 20. Then I go to the other hand. Then I go to the other. So she says to me, calm down. I said, I'm not going to hit anybody. She sees me clenching my fists in a dental chair. She thought I was going to strike somebody. I said, no, it's a hypnotic technique where I squeeze and I squeeze so tightly in my hand that the pain goes into my hand. Oh, okay. Come out of there on the Novocaine, whatever they're using. Lucky for me, this dentist I like because he's right over a Chinese restaurant that has a bar, that has a happy hour that just about starts when the dentist closes. And all I could think of as I was sitting in the chair is I'm going right to the happy hour. Period. End of story. I was going to combine the Novocaine with a martini the size of Manhattan, which I did. And I must tell you that after the martini and the Novocaine, as Jackie Gleason used to say, I was feeling no pain. I took home a little Chinese food, did the thing, watched some TV, went to sleep 8 o'clock, had a wonderful night's sleep, and woke up as refreshed as you can imagine. I stretched. It felt so good. I said, boy, that was a great night's sleep. But look at the clock. It was 10 o'clock. So then I had a whole night ahead of me. Now I only had 2 hours of sleep. I thought it was a whole night. Very refreshed between the drug and the alcohol. So I said to myself, what am I going to do now between 10 o'clock and 6 in the morning? I got to do the show tomorrow. I can't just like drift through a day. Lucky for me, if I stay in bed, I can actually psych myself into sleeping. And it was all night, like weird, those dreams, like dream state, like from The Sopranos, where the fish's head is mixed in with the gefilte and the merry-go-round and the other guy's talking. I wanted to wake up and write the dreams down. One of the things I've always dreamed of being able to do is put a device on my head when I go to sleep at night that transfers my dreams into a video imaging item. If I could do that, I would never have to do radio again. All I would do is sleep all the time and dream. I'm joking. No, because some of the dreams are so vivid and so revealing. It's awesome to me. I love it. Because I've done dream analysis with myself and my children when they were young, which I learned through the Native American, some of the tribal systems used dream analysis with their children. And they'd get up in the morning and they would each tell the dreams that they had. And then they would interpret them for each other. And it was a very interesting way to bring your subconscious to your consciousness and not be afraid of what's inside you. Do you know what I'm saying to you? Just a little story. It's another thing. I learned a lot of things from a lot of people along the way. I'll tell you another one, and it's maybe a little personal, maybe it isn't. I'm not revealing something I may not have revealed before. My son was about 8, 10, 12, I don't know how old. I was in Honolulu visiting. And I would hang out on a certain beach, talk to different people, because I'm a natural talker, and if I like people, I will talk to them, and they will communicate with me. So he looked at my son and he said, this guy was pretty tough. I think he was part Hawaiian. He was a rugged guy. And he said, take him to the zoo in front of the lion's den. And he said, hold him closely in front of the lion's den. And he said, let the lion come close to the bars. And let the lion roar at you and your son through the bars, because if a lion roars at you, by the way, the hot breaths come, is so powerful, it comes shooting across through the bars. The sound is, it'll rattle you because it's like a car, an airplane going by. That's the, king of the jungle. And I said, what's that going to do? And you'll teach your son never to be afraid of a man who yells at him. Well, I did that several times. Now, first the child will get afraid.
who wouldn't be afraid? But after a while, you say there are bars there that that animal cannot hurt you. Just stand here, and then you'll learn that no matter how loud someone yells at you, don't worry about it. And it worked. That's a good trick to, you know, today, I don't know if you could do it. Probably arrest you for child abuse. Can you imagine the age of the snowflake with Safe Spaces taking your son, or your daughter for that matter, to a zoo and holding them in front of a lion's cage and letting the lion roar at you? Can you imagine the world we live in? How wimped out this whole world has become? You can't walk with a child on a cliff and tell him not to look down, look straight ahead? What, that's also something wrong? Okay, what can I say to you other than I'll be back in a minute?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
We're living in extraordinary times. The last thing we need is a sourpuss feminist left over from the 60s, bringing back...
Guys, look.
What clip is this, 8? Yeah, listen to me. I'm playing some of the great highlights of the Savage Nation over the years to celebrate the Hall of Fame Day. And is this the things that I've seen in my lifetime? Yeah, okay, let's hear it again from the top.
We're living in extraordinary times. The last thing we need is a sourpuss feminist left over from the 60s, bringing back the panoply of maniacs like Janet Reno, Madeleine Halfbright, who bombed Serbia for no reason whatsoever, and the other killers and murderers who are under the guise of putting themselves off as some great heroes. Reincarnated before God, they pay for their crimes. In this world, they get away with murder. But I've lived through some historic times in my life. You won't believe this. And here they are. Look what I have seen in my lifetime. I want to show you how long I've been around this planet so you're going to get a feeling of what I've seen in my lifetime. One, Superman defeated by every man in World War II. Two, the first atomic bomb used in warfare. The establishment of the State of Israel. The popularization of television. This is all in my lifetime. The popularization of air conditioning. The popularization of air travel. The popularization of the personal computer. The invention of the internet. The assassinations of John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, and Martin Luther King Jr. I've seen the first man walk on the moon. I've seen the mainstreaming of homosexuality. I've seen the complete integration of blacks and whites. I've seen the development of mass welfare for unproductive citizens. I've seen the destruction of America's judicial system by corrupt lawyers. I've seen the meltdown of America's borders. I've seen the self-genocide of America's European-American majority through a mass abortion and mass tolerance of diverse sexualities. I've seen the acceptance of narcotics. I've seen the debasement of religion. I've seen the takeover of corporations by gamblers and con men. I've seen the elimination of grades in many schools. I've seen the introduction of racial quota systems. I've seen the impeachment of a president. What will I see in the future? Well, that's for you to decide, not me.
Savage.
I can fill in the blank on that one. We've seen it in the last 8 years. Okay, do I have to characterize what we've lived through? Now, there's another one that I want to play. It's called The White Owl from 309-2015. For no particular reason other than I think you need to know the growth of this program and what I've been calling for so long. The White Owl from March 9th, 2015 on the Savage Nation right now. A new low point in the American presidency, which was reached over the weekend, where the president gives demagoguery a brand new meaning. You would think that this man, after all these years, would have understood that he's dividing the nation, not uniting the nation. But he didn't, nor does he care, because he's doing just what he wants to do, which is to divide black against white, white against black, gay against straight, straight against gay, Asian against Hispanic, Hispanic against black. That's what this man is spending every waking moment thinking about how to do. Many of you have listened to Michael Savage for 20 years, know that this show is not a straight line show, know that it's not straightly one way or the other, that I use intuition, I use other parts of my being in my show, ranging from mere storytelling to dreams and such like that. Well, I had two of the most profound dreams of my life last night, and I don't know if they're related to Obama's new low in demagoguery, but I'm going to tell you about them. The first one I will call the White Owl. I was on a trail, you see, in the woods with my son and another person, because I used to walk him in the woods a lot when he was a kid. And as I walk now in the woods of my later years, I came upon a woman who I thought was walking a dog on a very long leash. It was like a 30-foot lead. And I stopped for a moment because I didn't recognize the breed. And as the breed turned, I saw it was a white owl with one eye, and one eye hollowed out. And I said to the woman, "Do you often go to this place in the woods?" She said, "Yes, we will know each other." The next scene was of Michael Savage lecturing in a small seminar room somewhere in a private facility on the meaning of rain. And then I gave a seminar to another small group on hunger. And I said, most of you understand by now that you could eat the most expensive meal in New York City, the most expensive meal in Los Angeles, and not enjoy one bite of your meal because you're hungry. And I said, I'm going to teach you today how to truly be hungry, which is to experience hunger so you can taste your food again. Now comes the most important part of the dream. The next dream was of a black woman in a black van. It was an older van. She was a middle-aged, heavy-set woman. And around her were a group of black teenagers. And she was speaking to them quietly. And here's what this black woman said in my dream. This white man's dream. Here's what this black woman said. She said, "America is a deep country. And you must find forgiveness in yourselves in order to find the deepness in this nation." Let me repeat it for you because it's what I had prayed to God the first black president would be teaching America. But he's not teaching forgiveness. He's teaching division. He's teaching hatred. He's teaching envy. He's teaching the antithesis of his alleged Christian beliefs.
Savage.
Pretty good. I have the painting, by the way, the white owl, which I did at that time. And, you know, at this juncture of the show, I must tell you that tomorrow or Monday, there's going to be another special surprise from me to the audience. It's a small one. As you know, on the Kindle editions, I put out an unpublished book that I wrote years ago called The Survivor, about a pending nuclear war and how a family flees to the South Seas after the blast. And I never expected it to be a big seller, and it isn't. But about, you know, whatever number of you bought it, you understand where I'm coming from. That was written in the 80s. I also put on Kindle the Banned in Britain book, for those of you who want a record of it. Well, come Monday, I'm going to be publishing about a New World Order. It was called The New World Order, 1991. It's a science fiction adventure that some who have read it, and only few have read it, considered a minor masterpiece of wit and dark humor, that actually and accurately predicted the direction of the femme-dominated Stalinist states emerging in former Western democracies. And so in Xenon, the title of this little book is called X-E-N-O-N. I've kept it in my archives for years, not knowing what to do with it. I decided to release these stories that I think are worthy of something. They're like fine wine that have been sitting in the basement. It's time to put them out there for people to enjoy. I don't want them lost in a trunk or thrown in the garbage. So I'm publishing Xenon as a Kindle Friday or Monday. I don't expect it to be a big bestseller, but I imagine this is an animation. I could see this becoming like The Little Prince by Son Exupéry. And here's my description of Xenon, X-E-N-O-N. Enter the future world state, an anti-utopian, new world run by militant FSSs who castrate males, assign them life mates who are transsexual, keeping the unclipped natural women for the state security forces, SSF, to assist the women in charge, WIC. State mind bogglers, SMs, delete memories and secretly use state gas stores of the noble gases to remolecularize their minds. Argon, freon, helium, krypton, neon, radon, and xenon. Envisioned and written in the early 1980s, this prophetic fantasy forecast Michael Savage's semi-serious alarm of a nightmarish future. Take it for what it is. It's science fiction. Don't get mad. Just read the book. It'll be around, I guess, Friday or Monday, probably Monday, on Kindle as a special crazy fiction piece for the holidays, in case you want something weird and odd that may one day be recognized for what it actually is, which is predictive of an age when Angela Merkel would destroy an entire nation, and how we missed the bullet of another FSS who almost took over America. Yeah, that's it. KSFO Joe, line three, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Michael, I just want to really say thank you from the bottom of my heart. I've been listening to you for quite a while. I'm 46 years old. I just want to say thank you for everything you've given us, and you're like the father of so many people that either had a father like you or just, you know, knows the truth. And it's amazing. You know what's so amazing? That I've listened to you for years, and I've listened to you on and off forever. So many things are so close together, how we, you know, what we see things. And your power of discernment is absolutely unbelievable. And I think out of all your gifts that God gave you, that's one of the most powerful ones he gave you, the power of discernment. You just see through so much stuff.
When you say discernment, you're referring to the word discern. And what does the word discern mean to you?
Well, discern to me, it's just when you see, for me, it's you just know what's wrong or right. There's it's just completely.
That's how I see things. I do. I'm pretty clear. You know, oh, how come you have no nuance? How do you know what's right and wrong? We're living in an age where they don't know anything. They claim they know nothing, that no one can know anything in the new age that we're living in. That's rubbish. We all know right from wrong. We all know right from wrong somewhere deep within us. We know what's right and what's wrong. So, do we all live up to it? Of course not. We're all, you know, doing the best we can. How many years have you listened to the Savage Nation, Joe?
Since probably right around 9/11, I believe, I found you.
Well, first of all, I'm glad I'm back on KSFO where you're listening to me here in San Francisco. It's the years I was off this station were like a dark period in my radio life because this is where I started. And I do love, I got to tell you, living in San Francisco as I do, as much as I love all the other cities and all the other stations, I mean, if I live here, I do like to occasionally run into people who listen to the show. It makes it like a family. And I thank you for being part of the Savage family for all of these years. It's now 45 minutes after the hour. I'll be back in a minute on this radio program to conclude for me a memorable day, the day that I am being inducted into the National Radio Hall of Fame in about an hour and a half live in Chicago. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
The 2016 National Radio Hall of Fame welcomes Michael Savage.
Listen up today, because today is going to be a masterpiece of outrage.
Michael Savage started his national talk show 22 years ago.
And now, direct from the towers above Manhattan, it's the Michael Savage Show. To the right of Rush and to the left of God, and now, Michael Savage.
I'm glad I can be with you 7 nights a week, because these stories are just not going away. I mean, every day in every way we're getting assaulted.
Communicating a simple message, borders, language, and culture. He changed the landscape of talk radio, rising to the top of the pack.
What about our nation? You're going to let them become citizens even though they're illegal, even though they broke the law? You know that many of them are on our welfare system. You know many more will go on. And you're going to tell me you're worried more about El Salvador and about the San Salvador than you are about America? I said, by definition, you ought to be deported.
This was not cookie-cutter radio. This was something different.
From Catcher in the Rye to Ketchup on the Fly in two generations. Starlets to harlots. Preachers to breachers. Athletes to sexleets. Rabbis to sandflies. Boy Scouts to Toy Scouts. Girl Scouts to Twirl Scouts. From the Eagle to the Beagle in two generations. From LSD to ADD.
So influential, even the liberal media named him the godfather of Trumpomania. Donald Trump used the Savage Nation as a sounding board.
What would you do if you were president, first day, what would you do with Putin to stop these war drums?
If I win on November 8th, I think I could see myself meeting with Putin and meeting with Russia prior to the start of the administration. I think it would be
wow. That's an amazing news story. That's fabulous, Mr. Trump. That's an amazing answer, because somebody, an adult, has to step in now and stop this insanity.
Resulting in the election of a president of the United States, Michael Savage. member of the National Radio Hall of Fame.
Well, that's the introduction tonight over there in Chicago in the museum, and it was created for me by Jim Verdi, one of the team members that he resides in Dallas along with Robert Borowski. These guys do the hard work every day of running the show, running the board, taking the calls, producing the sound. In Oregon, Doug Lynn does his work for me up there, and Doug's been with me for 16 years or more. And these are the guys behind the scenes who work so hard to make the show happen, and I'm really glad that they did this today. Jim did it in particular. Jim, you have a great radio voice. That's terrific. You should consider a career in radio on air. In fact, you ought to fill in for me one of these days and get one of the fill-ins as a call screener. Why don't we try that? That might work. What if Jim filled in for me? Jim, get on the microphone for 1 minute. Let's hear your voice on the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael Savage. Hello, America.
You don't sound as good as you just did in that production tape. I'm sorry. Make believe you're producing a soundbite. You got to get the mojo up like you're doing it for a show. I think you're a good producer and a very good sound engineer, probably one of the best. But thanks, Jim. That was terrific. Well, my friends, this is the magic of radio. It's a daily thing. And I want to think about it again in terms of numbers. 94 till now, 2016. Now, how many shows a year does the average talk show host do if he does 3 hours a day? He does 5 days a week. That's roughly 20 shows a month, right? Roughly. We're talking roughly. For approximately 12 months, taking off some time. So that's, I don't know, what is it, 200 shows a year? 2 1/4? Roughly 200 shows a year? 200, 250? I think I did it once. So if it's 250 radio shows a year, 10 years is 2,500, 20 years is 5,000 shows. So it took over 5,000 shows for the industry to recognize Michael Savage, America's champion for borders, language, and culture. And it took 22 years to elect a president. It's that simple. Many of you know that many of the speeches over the last year were derived directly from Government Zero. And what? Stop the coming civil war. And what? And scorched earth. And I want to thank each and every one of you for listening to this program today and yesterday. And good night.